It's been another long day. Don't get in my way. It's time to have a little fun. Everybody say, whoa!
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Smiley. All right, Smilers, we have, by the way, Smilers is the name of our podcast listeners. We actually were going to have a big like social media vote on what to call themselves. And then Sarah and I realized like, oh, we can just email all six people and, you know, just ask them what they want to be called. So, but Smilers, we have a treat for you. Sarah is not here. She actually is in Memphis visiting JFM on her, I think, sixth vacation of this summer. While I'm at Piney Woods Baptist Encampment slaving away, trying to make 900 youth kids laugh. Also swimming in the big pool with the water slide, but mostly suffering for the Lord the way that Paul did. Yeah. But it has allowed me to reunite with one of the greatest guys in the world. I'm just going to start with a huge compliment because I know you hate that. But this guy is a musician. He's a comedian. I just found out that you're a website builder. Right?
Yes.
No. Yeah. You don't talk. Oh. I haven't introduced you yet. How dare you?
I'm sorry.
No. You can do whatever you want to on here. But yeah, you're building a website. This is a month ago, but I just rebuilt my online store and went with a different company. And I'm really excited to see if it works. So first thing I'm going to say, Smilers, please, somebody order something. Because I'm not going to buy my stuff, and so I haven't tested it out to see if it works. But if you'll go to bobsmiley.com and just click on the new store, we'll see if I'm a website builder as well. But, man, you're from Canada.
Yep.
And probably the most popular guy to come out of Canada.
Please
welcome Ryan Reynolds. And
oh, that's good.
Oh, no, that's next week. I'm so sorry. This is Riley Armstrong. Now, our listeners have heard me talk a lot about you,
okay. And
I know I've already told you this, but you're kind of a running gag with Sarah and I because I didn't realize how many stories that we had together. So a lot of my stories start with, I was on tour with this guy named Riley Armstrong, and now she immediately finishes the sentence, like, from Canada, had dreadlocks, goes in. And so it's become this, like, running gag thing. So now you get credit for being at any story that I tell. And so I'll be telling her a story, and she's like, and then what did Riley say? So you've already played a huge role in my life in the, beginning of my career, but you continue without even being there to do this. But welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It is so good to be here. And, we traveled together quite a while, mm-hmm. and a lot of really weird things happened. And I think partly was just because weird things happen when you are driving all night and doing these events all over the place. But also we were younger and we didn't always, we would take events like, sure, we'll be there. And
yeah.
And
a bar
show
mitzvah?
Up and, yeah.
we'll be there.
But
you'd be in the hotel cutting out yarmulkes for us. I'd be reading the Torah. We'll do it. Yeah, we're there. You got a check? We'll take it.
I remember we were so hungry for shows that during Thanksgiving in the U.S., we knew that it wasn't Thanksgiving in Canada. And we would go do events in Canada. Well, the U.S. was having their holiday. We're like, we got work to do. We're headed to Canada, and we play there and then come back and start our Christmas shows.
That is right. This is why I wanted to sit down and talk with you, because there's so much I've forgotten. But as soon as you said that, I had a flashback of it being like -4 degrees and I'm trying to pump gas into the van and it's like congealed because it's so cold. And
it was such
But that was during that U.S. Thanksgiving, but not up in... That's right. So we went up into Canada whenever there were holidays down here.
We were in Winnipeg. I remember going to Winnipeg and we went to Ontario and Alberta. And that van that I had back then... It was the Bonneville. It was like a Chevy van. And
it was a big white van.
Yeah, and remember the back had that area where we put luggage underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top, we had that basically a foam pad that we laid out, a little camping mattress. And you used to call it the medicated pad.
The medicated pad, that's right.
Because you slept so good on there.
Oh, my goodness. So I've always had, well, I don't now, but I used to have horrible sleep issues all the time. And we were driving all night. Like, we would do a show, and then we'd drive all night, try to check in the hotel early, sleep a little bit. Like, we were staggering our, and so you built this perfect loft, so there was, you know, room for all the luggage and stuff underneath the van, and then you had this like egg crate deal, and as soon as I would lay down on it, I would just fall right asleep, and that never happened. And so, yeah, I did accuse you of like putting some kind of medicine on it. Yeah, we had the medicated pad. Do you remember what the van was called?
No.
How do you not remember that?
What was the van called?
You called it Elvis.
Oh, that's right.
Because it was a big white van, and it loved to pull in a fast food restaurant.
Yes. I forgot it was called Elvis.
Yeah, we had Elvis the van. Now, before we get too deep into this, another story that I thought of that cracked me up, and this was years later. We were doing a show in, I don't think it was your home church, but it was in California. And you got up and you told a story about your son Zephyrin and what he thought being Canadian meant.
Yeah.
For a little bit. Like, can you share that?
Yeah, I'll share that story. Yes, that was. So we moved to the US full time. I had been kind of back and forth from the motherland, Canada. Mm-hmm. My wife, Shannon, is from Canada. And even Zephyrin was born in Canada. And then we eventually moved to be in California. Now, Zephyrin was 2 at the time, so he didn't remember much prior to, you know, his experience in the U.S., but he knew that, he heard the word Canadian a lot. It was something we talk about, you know, being from Canada, and I don't quite know how it happened, but he kind of got the words Canadian and naked mixed up, as often kids do, you know?
Yeah.
3 years old, we used to run around the middle section of our house, you know, through the kitchen, through the living room, and he'd come and he'd stand, you know, in front of me and raise his hands and pronounce, "Look, Dad, I'm Canadian," you know, which was just priceless.
Yeah, of course.
When kids mess up words like that, you don't want to correct them because you're like, that's so cute. I want them to keep doing that. It's hilarious. But then, yeah.
He thought being naked meant being Canadian.
Yes, that's how he thought when you were Canadian. Maybe it was the birthday suit, and he knew he was born in Canada. There's probably some connection there.
There's got to be some correlation. But he's a smart kid.
He is. But then he also, he kind of got a little wigged out when he heard that, you know, on the phone one time that Mima and Papa, which are his grandparents, that they were Canadian. And we had to explain, okay, at this point, no, that doesn't mean they're at home with no clothes on.
Yeah.
It means it's where
although,
they're from. They could have been. Yeah. That was before FaceTime. So.
Yeah, thankfully.
Yes.
So thankfully.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So, 2 things. My dad loves to, like, make inappropriate jokes like that. And I remember when I came home from college one time, I was sitting on the couch with my mom and my dad, and we were watching a movie. And my dad just kept going, ugh, and just, like, adjusting it, like, just, like, uncomfortable, and I was like, what are you doing? And he goes, well, we're just not used to you being home, and it's just so weird having clothes on. And I hopped off that couch so quickly. I was like, oh, I don't. But so you told that story at the show, and then I remember my opening line. I got up and I said, well, I'm a comedian, I'm married, my wife and I like to be Canadian.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was like, that's the closest I can get to, like, blue material.
Exactly.
And the place went nuts. And it was so great. Well, yeah, so you've had quite an interesting, vast career in a whole bunch of different things. But before we get into all that, like, do you remember how we met?
You know, we met, I think the first time we talked, we were talked on the phone a couple times. And it was almost like we were set up by a mutual friend who thought we would be a great, like, combo.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, you two should meet and tour together. And I remember thinking, yeah, okay, I'd listen to your stuff, and I thought that'd be fun. And so I think the first time we met was over the phone, and we chatted it up, and then we met at the first time we did the event. Isn't that correct?
No.
Met prior to that?
This is why I'm so excited to interview you, because I want to see what you remember versus what I remember. So Dave Bonson was
That's
managing.
The guy, yeah, who connected
and so
us.
So you were touring with Audio Adrenaline.
Yeah.
And I don't like to talk about this, but I was touring with the Newsboys. And, you know, I rarely This is going to be a huge shocker to most of the listeners. But I was touring with the Newsboys, and Dave Bonson said, hey, there's this guy, Riley, that's touring with Audio Adrenaline. I think you guys should do shows together because he's a musician, but he's very, very funny and just an interesting show. So we actually didn't talk on the phone. The first time we met was at Spirit West Coast, and we were doing a late night show together. And
that was before we connected. Okay, because I remember that.
Because you're this young, you know, hot artist. You know, you had the song Greater Than was out. And
oh, that's
like,
right.
And I was like, oh, this guy's going to be huge. And, you know, I'm just this wannabe comedian. You know, he's not going to want to tour with me and stuff. And so I was super nervous to meet you. And you showed up late, which was a great, lesson for our tour. And you showed up late. And so you frantically ran out and you were trying to set up all your stuff. And, you know, because I think you had agreed to go do another show
or something.
I don't know what happened, but you had overcommitted.
Yep.
And so you were running to do your.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, exactly. And now that I know you, I look back on that memory going like, oh, that was Riley being Riley. But you were over there setting up, and I was so nervous. You know, you had dreadlocks. You were just like a cool-looking dude, and I was like, he's not going to want to hang out. And I'm just standing over there waiting for the right moment to say something to you. And as you're, like, plugging stuff in, you're like, hey, Bob, I want to talk to you afterwards. I think our tour is going to go great. And I was like, oh, what? He knows my name. And it gave me the confidence. And so, and we did that show together.
That's right.
At Spirit West Coast. And then afterwards we talked about like putting together a tour. And
wasn't, if I remember correctly, those late night Spirit West Coast comedy nights, those were a hit.
Oh, they were
huge. Were so much fun.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is incredible. And I was just picturing our tour to be just like that.
Exactly like that. And I had done Spirit West Coast probably like 4 years before that. And so I'd kind of built a following of, you know, that we go see Bob Smiley on the late night comedy show. Mm-hmm. And so that tent, remember that, because they put us in the biggest tent. And
it was
packed out.
Yeah.
And it was the one time I got to be Tim Hawkins.
Oh.
Like once a year, I would look at my calendar and be like, okay, I get to be Tim Hawkins right then. And so it was just a killer show.
Yeah.
And then that was the last killer show we had. Yeah, that's so true. Like you think like, okay, you're coming off Audio Adrenaline. I'm coming off the Newsboys. There's going to be just droves of people wanting to come see us. And this was before the internet.
Right.
But yeah, so we talked it out. You graciously said, hey, we'll travel in my van. We got the medicated pad and the van and our merchandise. One thing I learned on that tour, I had never heard James Taylor before. And we were doing a late night drive. It was like 2 a.m. And you put on James Taylor. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't like wake you up music, keep you awake. But it was the most soothing.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And so even to this day, like if I'm doing a late night drive or something, I'll put on James Taylor and be like, yeah, thank you, Riley. You're going to give me another, you know, couple hours.
Exactly. Let James keep us company here for the next little bit of road. Yeah,
yeah.
He's such a great. There's road music becomes, you know, the things that keep you awake through the night. There's sunflower seeds, you know, are so helpful. There's some great music. And then, of course, there's always like roll the window down and stick your head out. You know, the things you have to do to stay awake. And remember, we would put hours and hours of driving, like a commercial truck driver to keep his logs like legal. He has to stop at 500 miles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we wouldn't stop at 500 miles. We would drive and drive and drive. I mean, it was so. Looking back now, it's like the fact that we are here today by the grace of God and the prayers of our grandmas.
Yeah.
We are alive today because that's what kept us safe on those crazy drives we would do.
It was like so insane.
We would book shows and like, okay, we've got to play North Carolina today and we're in Nevada tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, who put this together? Oh, we did.
Yeah. Oh, it was us. Yeah. It was. Yeah, Ray Romano, when he was doing, you know, late night drives and stuff and just taking every gig and stuff, he said that he would take his pants off because he didn't want to wreck and then people find him without his pants on. So it was a mental thing of if I took my pants off, I would stay awake because I didn't want somebody to find me like that.
That's so funny.
And I was like, that's pretty. And you start looking for that kind of stuff. I remember I'd read a thing about Dennis Miller, and he was doing shows with Robin Williams. And Robin Williams got in the car one night, and they had like a six-hour drive. And Robin Williams was like, you awake, Dennis? You awake? And he's like, yeah, yeah, man, I'm good, I'm good. And he's like, okay, just don't forget, if you wreck and we die, the headline's going to read, Robin Williams dies in car with companion. And he's like, don't die until you're famous enough to get a name. And Dennis Miller was saying, like, that kept me awake. Like, and so I've often thought about that late night drives, like, okay, I can't die yet because they won't even print my name. Like, I want to make sure that I've gotten something, you know. There were people like, comedian Bob Smiley, you know.
Oh, geez.
But yeah, there was,
true.
I mean, we would deadhead just all over the place. So that is a question I have. Do you have any highlights or lowlights of the tour that like really stick out?
Oh, you know, I think that we had so many running gags that we enjoyed. Like, I'm thinking of one in particular that was every time we'd see a store, we'd, you know, yell something out.
Yeah.
It just became these running gags with the things we would see on the road. And the truck stops.
We were in our 20s.
Yeah,
right?
So
we can tell our listeners because they're the stuff that Sarah and I talk about on here, we've kind of vetted everybody.
Okay.
But
have you ever told them this one? That
no.
Whenever we saw, so there's a store up in the, where is that, like Minnesota?
It's
kind of
getting everywhere because every time I see one, I take a photo and text it to you.
So it's called Maynard's, but we would say, oh, Menards.
It was like a pirate getting hit below the belt. It was like, so, and again, we were in our 20s, and that kind of humor, and we were looking for anything just to stay away.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we would be driving, and all of a sudden, you know, I'd be drifting off, kind of almost dozing off, and all of a sudden I'd hear you go, oh, Menards. And then we would just be dying laughing. It was so great. Like little stuff like that. What are some of the others? Because I'm thinking of some now that are coming back.
I would say that we did a couple shows that were just absolutely, because what we used to do, remember, I would do 15, 20 minutes or you would do 15, 20 minutes. We would take turns. And so we would go back and forth.
Okay, I was going to talk about this. So I think it is important. You would open because music is the way to do it. Like just come out, boom, boom, boom. And you would open with Sleep. We'll probably play that song later in the podcast. And you would do a set. And then I would get up and do a set. And then we would do an intermission, right?
Yeah.
And then you would get up and open the second set, and then I would do another set, and then we would close with like 10 minutes of worship music, right? Which is laughable because you know I can't sing at all. But I would get up there and, you know, I would turn my mic off and sit up there and act like I was singing. But it was a great way to end the
it
night
was.
Of like good worship and stuff. But yeah, the reason why I say that is I have a question for you later about that, but I wanted to set that up, that's how we did our show, which is... Sorry to keep talking so much. Sarah's going to totally get on me. She was like, Riley is such an introspective person. Let him talk. And I will once you get your own podcast.
But yeah, exactly.
Right now, this is me time. It's daddy time here. But I look back on that, and I learned so much on that tour with you just about life. But I also learned how to have two openings and two closers. And as a comedian trying to figure out how to do comedy, like, that was so valuable to have two different slots each night to try to figure out, like, and then pacing and all that kind of stuff.
It did. It really worked to our benefit. And we did it more or less just to, you know, to keep it interesting and keep the crowd engaged. I think that was part of it. And I think that really worked, too, because it kind of left them always wanting more, right?
Yeah,
Rather than giving them kind of too much all at once. It kind of really helped to kind of create a very interesting night together. I would say that there was one time, see if you remember this one, where I think we were in Michigan somewhere, and we'd been booked to play this coffee house, and we get to the coffee house, and the guy running the place, he's like, what? No, I was never told that there's going to be an event here. And it was super discouraging, and because he wasn't ready, obviously, and the coffee shop's empty, and I just kind of, I instantly get defeated, and I'm like, oh, man, this is so, you know, just frustrating when this, you know, when we show up and nobody's ready and nobody's here, and obviously this is going to tank, And you always had such a great attitude because you're like, nope, hey, we were booked to play, so let's play it. Even if it's just us, you know, working on new material, let's just set up and do it. And I remember thinking, wow, that's what I want to have that attitude in stinky situations like Bob did, because that was something that, man, I let it get me down, and it was kind of fun to be able to be with somebody that they were able to kind of rise above it. And that's what you did. And I think that is something that I've learned from you over the years, as to how to rise above stuff and come on, buck up and get to work. This is what you do, whether people are here or not. And that was pretty impressive.
Well, let me totally debunk that theory then, because
okay.
I totally remember that night.
You remember that?
And that was one of the, I have a few memories that really stand out. And so I booked the tour. Do you remember? Because I cut a deal with a booking agency in
That's
Nashville.
That's right.
And so before we went on tour, I went in every day and I made 200 phone calls a day, which was my goal. And I was able to use their promoter list. And so I would start calling in Florida, and I would call all day. And then end up in calling California because of the time changes.
Oh, that's
and stuff.
Right, yeah.
And I'd try to make 200 calls a day, and I booked this tour. But then when we went out on the road, we still had some open, you know, like dates and stuff. So I had a friend come in and start booking stuff. And I think it's the same night that you're talking about. Because we did show up at several coffee places where it was depressing, and you were
yes.
like, oh, why it, are we? And I'd be like, no, let's just do it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So I'm not taking away the compliment. But the night in Michigan,
in particular, that
we
I'm
showed up,
of.
And this was like week maybe 4 or 5 of shows every single
yeah,
day.
Yeah, we had been busy.
We
yeah.
were just, and we got there, and they had the specials, the drink specials, and then underneath it, Riley and Bob.
Yeah.
Like no time.
Yeah.
Like they were not prepared for us. What happened was the owner had talked to the guy that was now booking, you know, our deal, and they were like, they booked a door deal, which I would never book a door deal because I was always like, you know, and a door
yeah.
deal for our listeners is like you show up and you get whatever money people pay
right.
for tickets, which is, you know, if you're unheard of, then
right.
that's not going to be a lot.
No, it turns into panhandling at
yes,
that point.
Yes, exactly. And so we got there and we were looking around and there was like 6-7 people in
yeah.
this coffee shop. And we were talking to the waitress, and the waitress was like, yeah, I don't think we have anything tonight. And we were like, but we're Bob and Riley. We're on the specials, you know, and we realized. And so this is what we did that night. And I remember this as like a moment of like, I don't have to do everything. Like, I can actually take some time for myself, because you and I discussed it. We looked around. We were like, nobody's coming to see us. They haven't promoted it. The owner evidently sent word just to put Bob and Riley, and they had us over in a corner.
Yeah.
And it was just really small. Do you remember that?
And wasn't the waitress rude? Like, there was
super
some
rude. Dude.
There was something that really put it over the edge for us.
She was mad that I was married, which happened a
right.
lot on the tour.
Yeah,
yeah, that was something that we had to really.
We there was times where we had to say, Bob, whatever you do, don't tell him.
Yeah, yeah, just go in. I got to sell some merch. Just act like. No, she was super rude because she was annoyed that we were bringing equipment in.
That's right.
And merch yeah. and all that. And she was like, you know, and so she, I guess, called and was like, talked to the owner. And she said, yeah, I guess you guys can just set up over here in the corner and just play whatever you want. So we knew we weren't welcome or anything.
Yeah.
So I remember that particular night, you and I, we sat there at the table and we were like, let's just don't do it. Like, let's just don't do it.
That's
and it was
right.
one of the few times that we just left.
Yep.
And here's what we did. We went and we got a hotel. We were trying to book the cheapest hotels
yep.
and just save as much money. But there was a nice hotel. I think it was a Hampton.
I think so.
May have been the first time that we were like, you know what? We're treating ourselves to a Hampton. And there was a restaurant in the parking lot with a Hampton. And it said, all you can eat perch, $9.99.
Yes,
and
I
was like,
that.
I was like, you know what, Riley? I would never pay $9.99 for a meal for me, but tonight.
Let's do it.
And we did. We went and ate all you can eat perch and then got a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
And it was so much better than like doing a show for 6 people. And
oh, it was. We lived it up that night. Didn't we get a phone call in the morning too
yeah,
from
yeah,
the booker
yeah.
booking agency saying, why didn't you play? We're
it
in
was
so
just
much
a
trouble.
Friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I told him no door deals, but
yeah.
he was one of those guys that, you know, he'd be like, no, just whatever, you know, like, yeah, we'll do
yeah.
it. Because he just liked the hustle and bustle. And yeah, we got a call because the owner, and there's no way this happened, but the owner said that a family had driven like 4 hours to see us and showed up and was like super disappointed that we had canceled the show. And there were other people there that wanted to see the show. Well, first of all, the owner was never even there, wasn't even going to show up that night. And none of the staff really knew what was going on. So there's no way that they promoted it. And we, you know, I mean, we had websites, but it wasn't like a big social media blast.
And thinking back now in our maturity, we should have left a note with the owner or with the coffee shop saying, meet us at the All You Can Eat Perch restaurant. Yeah. We'll be there all evening.
Yeah, we'll get up. If more than six people show up, we'll get up and do a show.
Yeah, it's funny. But of course, back then, you don't think about someone driving, you know, coming to the event from far away. All you can think of is like, I am not going to be set up in a corner and play, you know? I mean, especially when you're tired and you've been going and going and going.
At that point, we had kind of been beaten down. Like, we were still loving what we were doing, feeling like this was God's calling. But, like, we were just emotionally and physically just beat. Yeah. And then we got there and we were like, do we really want to set up? And But, again, there were so many nights where we were playing coffee houses, and, you know, I would try to stay positive because I'm always like, hey, let's just do it. But there were times where I really envied your guitar, because you would get over in the corner and just start playing songs, and people would be drinking their coffee or whatever and just enjoying the music, and then you would somehow draw them in by playing, you know, songs that they knew, and then drawing them in, and then playing one of your funny songs, and then getting them. And then I watched you, like, draw the attention to you, and I was like, oh. And then I get up and I'm like, hey, waka waka waka, and they're like, can you waka a little quieter, I'm trying to drink my latte. And
you know, that's funny, because even to this day, I'll often, if I'm playing a place I haven't played before, I'll say, hi, my name is Riley Armstrong, and what I do is a mixture of music and comedy, unless you don't laugh, and then it's pretty much just music. And I realize now that's kind of a gift. Like, at least I got something. It's something. Being a full-on stand-up comic, you don't got that something else. It's what you got is your bits, and you got to hold people's attention. I can't imagine. I can't imagine doing that. I could always bust out a cover of James Taylor. You know, I could always do something that could, you know, kind of somehow give them something to listen to while they talk over me. But I couldn't demand their attention like a stand-up comedian needs to be able to do. And so anyway, I learned so much. You taught me a lot about how comedy works, about like the callback and your timing, and how just important your timing is to a joke. And so anyway, I really felt like I went to school on those, and I think it made me a lot better. At that point in my career, I had been a singer-songwriter, and I really wanted people to love my serious songs, but it was the funny ones that always people would come and want to hear. In fact, I think we're, you know, going to play at the song Sleep, which is one of those songs that came. It was just me, you know, kind of bio song talking about, you know, being really tired and thinking, hey, people could relate to this.
Okay, wait a minute. Let's pause, because that's actually a perfect segue. Let's play the song Sleep, and then you kind of tell, like, about the song. So,
sure.
All right. So, guys, this is Sleep. It's actually the very first song I heard Riley play at Spirit West Coast. And you'll hear it, and you'll be like, oh, yeah, Bob needs a tour with a guy that could write this. So this is Sleep.
Straight at the light, never used to be that bright last night, but it's a new day with fuzz in my eyes, the alarm still ringing when I open the blinds, and how do these people do it? They're like driving around like there's nothing to it, and I imagine it's the medication, Your Honor, well, probably the coffee, but there's one thing for certain in life, and that's today I'm gonna eat cereal, and today I'm gonna eat cereal. I mean, come on, let's get our priorities straight, and before you know it, I'm out the door late, just trying to catch some rat or some race or something, I'm not quite sure what it is, so for now, well, I just best keep running, and by 9 a.m. my brain and my body, they finally decide to meet, and we come to the same conclusions yesterday. You know what? I never get enough sleep. Sleep, no, I never get enough. Always waking up tired. Sleep, no, I never get enough. If I don't show up, I might get fired. Sleep, no, I never get enough. Always waking up tired. Sleep, no, I never get enough. If I don't show up, I might get fired. intravenous, cause what I need every time I get well. Stuck behind a truck, just trying to turn left, just trying to turn left. Why are you trying to turn left? And why don't you park that crazy little cube van? Hop in, I'll like drop you off or something. Cause at this rate, we'll both be late, and I'd rather be late than both be sitting here doing nothing. And by 9 a.m., my brain and my body, well, they finally decide to meet, and we come to the same conclusions yesterday. You know what? I never get enough sleep.
Sleep, no, I never get enough. Always waking up tired. Sleep, no, I never get enough. If I don't show up, I might get fired. Sleep, no, I never get enough. Always waking up tired. Sleep, no, I never get enough. If I don't show up, I might get fired.
Yeah, and so that song, and if people want to go on YouTube, the video, the music video is hilarious. It is so
yeah,
great.
Yeah, it was claymation, kind of almost in the vein of like
Wallace and Gromit.
Wallace and Gromit, yeah. And it was made entirely by my friend Ben Sissel, who was drummer for Audio A. It was his idea.
Hold on, you dropped that name.
Oh, right yeah. Yeah, so, there, thank
there
you.
You go.
Yeah, so
we don't drop names on the podcast.
Oh,
like
oh,
my best friend
me.
Toby Mac taught me that, and
okay.
I try to, you know, stick with that.
Well, my friend who will remain nameless, he
was it Ben Sissel?
It was Ben Sissel.
Oh, he's the drummer from Audio A.
Yeah.
Okay.
He put it all together. It was his idea. It was one of those things where he said, "Hey, I'm making you a video." And I'm like, "You what? Which song?" And he's like, "Sleep." And I'm like, okay. And yeah, he had this idea, and he had, you know, had a camera, and he put it together and showed it to me, and oh, I just loved it. In fact, I was so proud of that thing that we actually even made some outtakes where his
oh, yeah.
dog kept on getting in and chewing on the main character, but his dog was so well behaved that we had to like force his dog to
oh,
like,
so you were inventing bloopers.
Yeah, we were inventing bloopers.
So before Bugs Life or Pixar, like you were,
yes.
you were inventing your own bloopers. That's so
oh,
great.
Oh, we were trying. Yeah. We were like, come on, wouldn't it be funny if the dog got the main character?
Yeah.
But anyway, that was a blast coming up with that. That song initially was the first time I played it was at a tiny little summer camp in northern Alberta. And I'm serious. That song was from, I think, 1996. I mean,
oh,
it
wow.
is, it was an it was one of the first songs that I ever wrote that generated like people like, hey, that was cool.
Yeah.
That's a great song. I laughed. That was
people
funny.
Would show up and request it. Like,
yeah,
it had, you know, it kind of did some groundwork for us.
Yeah.
Do you remember? I think you told me this story where like you wrote it when you were had a day job and you were riding your bike. To the work, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, that's when that song came about. I was a gardener, and I would ride my bike to work, and it was uphill, and I would kind of like be pedaling and trying to to pace myself, and I was so tired, and that song kind of just came out of that kind of like sleep. No, I never get enough. Always waking up tired. And so the song came out of me pacing myself up the hill, pedaling my bike to my job as a landscape guy. And yeah, that's how that song came about.
So we try to have some takeaway. You know, we're a funny podcast and stuff, but we have some takeaways for listeners. And so listeners, if you want to be a hit songwriter, become a gardener.
Yes.
Okay. All right. There you go. I just want to throw in some, you know, some meat for the people that are listening.
Seriously, though, that like being out in nature, it was so inspiring. And a lot of my songs, especially the first couple albums, had a lot of references to nature. And part
yeah,
of
yeah.
it was because I was outdoors, like planting flowers. And, and, you know, I had a song called Lavender.
Oh, yeah.
That made my first album. And that was because I was planting lavender in between these rocks of this back walkway. You know, I'd spent 3 days doing it, and I loved the smell of lavender. Well, you love the smell of lavender initially, but then day three, it's like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm good.
Let's move on. But but I wrote a song out of it, and it yeah, a lot of the songs initially that I would write were very nature related because I believe that nature was such a revelation of of a God who is creative and who allowed us to, you know, the sky didn't have to be blue, but it is. The grass didn't have to be green, but it is. And we as, you know, creation didn't have to be people that recognize those things, but he gave us the ability to see beauty in his creation and see colors. And yeah, so that's, that really kind of permeated a lot of my music initially, that kind of idea and concept.
Wow. So I was making notes and stuff, and so I did think of a couple of things that stood out on the tour. One of them was we were playing in Hobbs, New Mexico, and the way I promoted the tour, the way I booked the tour was, you know, I'd make all these phone calls, and then you had given me three songs, and I had, you know, a full 45-minute, you know, CD, like press CD of a show that I just recorded at a church somewhere with, you know, like one overhead mic, you know, like it was, but it was enough to get the audience and me, you know, which is very difficult to get the audience mic'd when you're doing stand up and without paying any money.
Yeah.
And so I had that. And so I would send out that I'd made a CD with my full show on it and then your three songs. And then, you know, it would, I would send it, I would mail it out with, you know, contact to call me back and let's book the show. So I would mail those out every single day, and I'd mail them all over. And we got to Hobbs, New Mexico, and I had 45 minutes set. Like, that's what I had. I had a 45-minute set, and then I could take questions, and I found out that I could kind of ad-lib a little bit, but, you know, that was maybe 5 minutes of stuff. And that was it. Like, that was the stretch. And we got to Hobbs, New Mexico, and the youth leader welcomed us, and he was like, man, we're so excited. My youth group is, like, they can't wait to see you guys. I played the CD for them, and I was like, what? And they were like, oh, yeah, they love all your stuff. And they can't wait to hear your other stuff. And I was like,
no.
What? And I never even thought about saying, please don't play this for the audience that we're coming to perform for. And that night was miserable for me.
Man.
Because they had heard your, you know, three songs, and they wanted to hear those songs again, because musicians can get up and play the same songs, and everybody's like, yeah, that's why we came. We want to hear, you know, that. I got up and kids were mouthing along.
They knew it.
Oh, they
knew it. I remember that.
So well.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
wouldn't they even kind of jump the gun and the punchline before you got to it? And you're like, come on, you're killing me.
Yeah. I was like, you guys are killing me. Yeah. I was talking about my dad. I used to do a bit about the, I actually did it last night. I dusted it off and did it last night for this, this youth camp I'm at. But it was about my dad's belt was huge, and so it looked like seven cows sewn together.
Yes, yes.
And I remember just saying that, it looks like seven cows sewn together, and one kid hollered out, it has an udder on one side.
Yeah.
When you'd spank, you, milk would fly out.
You're like gah!
Yeah. And so I was just like, oh, come on. But that was really a, I won't say a learning moment, because, like, it's good to put your stuff out there. When YouTube first came out, we were all, as comedians, were nervous about, like, is it going to burn our material?
Right.
Is it all? So I don't necessarily think that. Like, you just put out stuff and hope you're gaining, you know, followers and stuff. But at the time, before social media and all that, to have a room full of people that had listened to your CD several times and knew your stuff, it was grueling.
Like, yeah. In fact, I remember, I think it was early on, a mutual friend of ours, Darren Streblo.
Oh, yeah.
He used to take really good notes of what jokes he told at what places, so that when he would get a callback, which, of course, that there's no greater compliment in, you know, show business than to be invited back to play an event again. And he would take really good notes, and I always think, oh, I wish I would have done that.
Yeah.
Because what have I said here, what bits have I used here before? And you know, a lot of the times it doesn't matter, there's enough new people, and the people that are there to see you again, they want to hear those, but
they want some new stuff.
They want some new stuff. And I know Darren, I learned that from him, like, oh, keep track of what you say where, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he had names for his bits, which we do, and he would just keep a little log of where he'd said what, and it kind of helped to get it, let him be in charge of what he shared again, or what he used that was new. And I'm thinking, oh, that would have been a good idea.
Oh yeah.
And you'd think that, oh, then I'd start then. Is no, I just always told myself that would have been a good idea if I would have done that. But
so I've been doing this 21 years now. This is how long
wow,
I've been doing stand-up.
21 years, Bob.
And in 2019, I started writing down what I'd done.
Right before.
Because I have it all in the calendar, yeah. In the iCal. Yeah. And so I was like, why don't I get, after the show, go back to the hotel and write out my set list? So, because I do get invited back a lot. And so I'm like, so I just started doing that. So even 20, you know, years in, we're still learning so much.
It's so true. You're still learning even today. I'm still stuck on 21 years.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Like, this has been your entire life. I mean, prior to comedy, you had a couple little, you know, small jobs, but this has been your career for most of your, well, for all of your adult life.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And you've raised a family and on it, and that's pretty incredible.
You know what's funny is when COVID hit, I tried to get hired at Walmart and HEB, our grocery store, and I had no resume. I had a 20-year gap. I worked at Video Spot Video Tape Rental, and I mowed lawns at Era, and then there was a 20-year gap, and they were like, What did you do? I told jokes. And I felt like a schmuck, you know, pulling up YouTube and showing an interviewer like, no, this is me. Look, I was a big deal. I think I've told this on the podcast, but I started Uber Eats driving. And when my second Dry Bar comedy special came out, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
Claiborne Cox texted me and said, your second Dry Bar just dropped. Like, it's so great. And I had to text him back and go, that's awesome, but I've got to deliver this Taco Bell to this third flight apartment complex. Let me make my delivery, and then we'll talk about my second Dry Bar special. It came out like, it was so humbling. It was just amazing.
Oh, but hey, you had to do what you have to do.
Yeah.
And also, too, I think, wouldn't you agree that last year, just doing something to just have something going on. I mean, you can't just sit and do nothing when you're busy, you know, when you're used to being very, very busy. And
Sarah said that a lot. Yeah. She was like, you can't sit here. I don't know where you're going to go, but you need to go somewhere.
Have something to keep you busy. And normally what you would spend a lot of your time doing is not only material writing, but then you're set up, your calendaring, and you got all kinds
booking
of scheduling.
Booking flights and hotels and rental cars. I didn't realize how much time that took up. Yeah. And then all of a sudden all that was gone. And I was like, oh, I've got like an hour a day of nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. So, what am I going to do? And a little something busy or something to keep you busy. And I always look at it as, hey, an opportunity for material, right? Whenever doing something that's like a lot of the times when I'll get to go play at a school chapel or something like that. And I always think, well, I kind of not necessarily all that jazzed about going, but who knows, maybe a great story will come of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And often if you got your ears on, you know, it will, there'll be something fun that you can take and run with. So
that's a good segue back to our tour, because it was great. It was a learning experience. You and I got to be really good friends. But there was a lot of miserable, you know, late night drives. We were sleep deprived and just playing in huge churches. When I started touring with Tim, I was like, it's so nice not to have to go out and say, will everybody move down forward?
Oh, that's nothing worse than that.
And we've done so many shows where we had to ask the guy introducing us, will you ask everybody to move down forward, you know, or sit on the stage with us so we could play. But so a couple other memories that we have. So we were just touring and taking every show that I could book. I'd booked us in Baylor University, and it was a afternoon show, I believe. But we showed up like early, and we were playing in this little theater or something on the campus. And what I didn't know was a sorority had booked us. Do you remember this at all?
It's coming back to me as you're talking. Yeah. I'm all of a sudden remembering this.
So the sorority president just happened to be fans of us. And so I somehow had her number, called her. She booked us. But what she didn't tell me was she decided to make it a private show and only invite like her closest friends. Because she thought, so we were in a theater that sat, I think, about 800.
Yeah.
And we got there and we're sound checking and she was telling us like it was just going to be those eight people and we were miserable. And as we were walking back to the van to then go to our hotel to try to grab just a couple hours of sleep, and we'd driven all night, we were walking by these bushes and there was a little songbird that landed right beside us. Do you have any recollection of this?
I,
The bird landed right by us and just started tweeting the most beautiful morning song. Yeah. It was probably 8:30.
Yeah.
And you stopped and turned and looked it dead in the eye. And you go, what are you so joyful about? Stop your ridiculous joyful noise. And the bird just stopped and kind of was taken back. I'm here to bless you. And then he just kind of flew off. It was like if you wrote it in a sitcom, people would be like, oh, that's too unbelievable. Yeah. It was perfect timing. I was walking right behind you and you were like, what are you so joyful man. About?
That's funny.
But it totally drove home exactly the way we felt. Like we were just beaten down, what do we have to do to get people to come and listen to us and stuff? And we just felt like we needed a break, and then this little songbird dared to just tweet, 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 tweet.
Yeah, was trying to remind us about what's important in life, and we're like, leave us. We are companions with misery right now.
That was another running gag that we had, and you can tell me if I need to cut this out, because I don't know if you use this for other people, but if we were just in a miserable show or we were dealing with a promoter that was just impossible, we always talked about having quilting needles to just stab in our eyes. And so anytime we were just at our wit's end, but we didn't want to say it because there were people around, you would always go, Bob, do you have my quilting needles? And I'd go, no, I'm sorry, I'm going to use them in just a second. And that was kind of our inside joke of this is miserable. Get me out of here.
That's so funny.
Okay, so did you?
I was just gonna say, and because then there would be that redeeming event where we had a venue that was perfectly sized for the group of people there. Like I remember, I think it was Irvine Baptist Church in Irvine, Texas, and it was a Wednesday night youth group thing, and it just was so stinking awesome, and the kids were just a packed room and everybody loved it, and we'd have one of them and it just would fill the tank, and you're yes, and it kind of made up for all those sour experiences along the way that you just have them. I mean, and part of it is now too, wouldn't you agree, Bob, booking an event for a Tuesday night, we probably could have just not bothered. We could have just taken the day off but we were so hungry to just make it that we would go ahead and we'd book every day of the week.
Every single day.
Every day is an opportunity. Afternoons, evenings, what do you got for us? We'd take it. And now looking back, it's we could have been smarter. quality over quantity. But at that point, that's where we were in our career.
So my favorite story, and my kids quote you all the time, because this is probably, it's at least in the top 10 funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
Uh-oh.
So we were splitting the gas.
Yeah.
We were in your van, and so kind of the deal was we would use your van, but I would book the tour.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like a trade-off and stuff. And you were always very, very gracious on the road and whatever's yours is mine as well. It's very Canadian.
Amen.
And so we had 2 days off that I couldn't book shows, but you had booked a show, and I don't remember where it was, but it was somewhere in the middle of the States. And so you were like, okay, I'm going to pay the gas and I'm going to go up and do the show. You can either, I think we had a hotel or something. You said we could either extend the hotel and you just stay here, or you can go with me. And you were also great because you had some dates on throughout the 4 months that we were out, and you would call them and say, hey, I've got Bob Smiley. Do you want to add him on?
That's right.
But
yeah.
This particular one, they just wanted you. And so I was like, no, I'll go and I'll help set up and all that kind of stuff. And so, but you were paying for the gas, kind of important for the story.
Okay.
So we're driving, and we get out in the middle of nowhere, and we're starting to run out of gas, and we're sweating it, and you're like, I don't know what, and this is before, I think you had a cell phone, but you couldn't look up.
Right. No
where
GPS
gas station.
Or, yeah, no way to find out where gas was.
So we pull up to this redneck hole in the wall, little gas station. The guy lived behind in a motorhome, and gas at the time was, I don't know, maybe $1.40 or something like that.
Right in there.
And it was $5.97.
Yes,
and
I remember
pulled up
that.
And you were so mad. And one, you're Canadian, and two, you're Riley Armstrong. You don't get mad. Like, I've seen you mad a handful of times, but you just always are just so pleasant. And, you know, and so we pulled up, and you were so angry, and you got the gas thing, and you put it in. You were going to have to fill up the tank. And I was feeling so bad, like, you know, but I'm not bad enough to go, hey, you know what, I'll split the gas with you. And I had to go to the bathroom. So I go in to go to the bathroom. And you finish filling up, but I go into the bathroom, and the bathroom's out of order. So I walk back out, and I'm like, of course, you know, yeah. Like $5.97 for gas, and, you know, and no bathroom. And I walk out, and you're there, and you're laying money down just as bitter as can be. And the old proprietor is sitting there just grinning like, I got one. And, you know, spider caught a fly. Yes. And I walk out, and you go, I thought you were going to the bathroom. And I go, oh, it's out of order. And without missing a beat, you go, what, is the hole full? And I, it is still to this day one of the funniest, most quick-witted things I've ever heard in my entire life. And it just, like, it summed up that whole, like, experience that we were having right there.
Oh,
what,
geez.
Is the hole full? And so to this day, my kids, if we're, like, mad about something, one of my kids will go, I guess the hole's full. Like, it's like a running gag at this with the Smiley Boys.
Oh,
and
yeah, that's so funny.
But do you remember that? Because
I do,
like,
yes.
As you're telling stories, I'm like, oh, I do remember the Dallas show that we had that was so killer. And but I didn't remember it until you said it.
And I wouldn't have remembered about that event that we were making that trek up to that event. But yeah, I'm like, yeah, you're right. I there was a few things that a few times where we would venture off in a different direction to do an event that you had booked that was a Bob show, and I would come along, or a Riley show, and you would come along, and it was and all of that before. Like, I remember you didn't have a computer at the time.
Mm-mm.
You were doing things with just a paper notebook. And
I didn't
we
have
were,
a cell phone. You had a cell phone.
It's amazing that we managed as well as we did with connecting these events and these shows together. It's pretty remarkable comparative to now, where, you know, you've got websites where you're listing your events and you're advertising on Instagram.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, you've got the dates in a calendar that shares with, you know, the people that know. And it's just crazy to think that the difference that we were in then comparative to now. To think, actually, like, back then, a big part of what kept us on the road was selling our products.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, shirts and CDs. And, like, even though still to this day, you know, a DVD and a CD will sell, but, like, if you were to say to a kid, like, here at camp that we're at right now, if you were to say, hey, where would you go to listen to a song? They would say YouTube.
Yeah.
And if you would say, okay, well, where would you go to buy a song? Where would you go to buy it? And they would be like, I don't get what you mean.
Yeah,
like,
buy it.
They just, there's no concept of ownership of a song. Like, what are you talking about? It doesn't make sense. And that shows just how, in a span of our career, how things have dramatically changed with creative content has gone from something that you could actually fill your gas tank with,
mm-hmm.
Even if it is for $5.99, you could sell CDs to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just like, yeah, you get stream money. But I mean, we're talking months later, mm-hmm. months after it happens, and fraction of the price of what you would have gotten if you would have sold a CD. It's just, it's completely game. The game has changed entirely.
When people come up to my table and buy DVDs, and people still do, I really just want to go, really? Why? But I'm
but
grateful.
Okay.
But yeah,
okay, here you go.
I mean, we're at a youth camp, Piney Woods, which is, like, very dear to both of us.
Yep.
And I sold a DVD last night. And a kid was buying two shirts. And then he was like, yeah, and give me a DVD. And I really almost went, really? Why? Like, do you even have anything to play it on? Like, but so every once in a while you do that, but it has changed.
It has.
Completely. You were the king of merch. That's something that I did learn from you, because I had my little CD, and then I think I had a generic, like, t-shirt that just had a funny saying on it or something, but you, like, had everything. I remember we would be in the hotel, and you would fall asleep at the desk because you were painting these beads.
The beads.
You would be making all these like cool armbands and all this kind of stuff. And just the most creative merchandise. And you would sell like tons of them. But every night you would have to paint, you know, 200 beads. And
we were so ahead of our time. Do you remember this? Remember how I used to make duct tape wallets? And like this is back in the Yeah, this has been like 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. I'm making these duct tape wallets. But then I got so tired of making them, I thought, I'm just going to make a DVD with instructions of making the wallet. But then I thought, why don't I have Bob come and like, he could make fun of me while I make these wallets. And it'd be kind of like a commentary. Like, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. And of course, it was, we should find that and put it on YouTube. Because
we should. I totally forgot. We did. We made a video on how to make a duct tape wallet. And we went into Walmart and we're like all like covert, like trying to film.
Showing how to buy the right, how to tell what duct tape would be the right, the best kind. And that
we've
got to
find that video and put it online.
We do, because that was like way ahead of its time, you know, for that kind of stuff. That whole reality TV DIY, you know, kind of. And the fact that you were making fun of me the whole time we were making the wallet was just priceless, because the boring, tedious part of making a wallet, because it took a long time and it was, you know, labor of love, really. Yeah. But having you, you know, your jokes and like what made it really funny. And I'm going to see if I can find that.
We got to find that. I totally that see stuff. Again, I completely forgot about that. But I remember I'd be driving 3 a.m. just empty highway, just out in the desert. And I would just hear and you'd be sitting next to me and you'd have like four or five duct tape wallets up on the dashboard that you were doing certain things to.
Yeah.
And
kind of like an assembly line.
It was an assembly line. But you would be working nonstop making those duct tape wallets. The other thing I remember besides you making merch and falling asleep at the desk, because I would look over and be like, oh, is he alive? Because you would just kind of slump over.
Oh, I would just pass out. Yeah. I mean, in a way, it was just like, and I'm done.
And you're And the other one is you had these big, long dreads.
Yeah.
And so you would wash your hair or just wet it or whatever you guys do.
Yeah.
I don't have no, and then they were so heavy that you had to time it where you had to lay down. Because you couldn't, like, because the weight of it.
That's
and so many nights I thought, oh, if I'm going to rob him, now's the time to do it. Because he can't move. He can't get up.
His hair's too wet.
He's got these hair snakes laying everywhere.
That's right.
They were so heavy.
It was so heavy, and it gave me a headache. So I had to, like, okay, I'm going to time this. It's bedtime. I'm going to have a shower, wash my hair, and then straight to bed, because if I try to do anything, this hair is going to feel like it's going to rip out of my head because it's so heavy. You know, that reminded me of something else. There was another thing that I had thought of that came to me. Oh, I know why I was so adamant about making merch and having something to sell. Is part of it came out of the fact that I was Canadian. I'm in the United States on a work permit. I'm legally allowed to be here for music and doing my entertainment. But if I could not go get a job at Burger King. Like I had only one option.
Mm.
And that was to make music work. Otherwise I had to leave the country. And so it really did have this kind of like an extra bit of weight to it. And it's kind of why I was so adamant about trying to squeeze every dollar out of every event we had, or having something available to sell at every event we had, is because like this is it. If this doesn't work, I have to leave. And I loved it here, and I loved doing what I did. And to have to go back and say get a job at Starbucks or something like that would have made this not possible. So
always, you know, I think all the listeners know this, but man, if you have been blessed and can buy merchandise from whatever artist, that keeps us going.
It's huge.
Like, it is really, really important. Like, it's good that, you know, if you're a fan of the band or comedian stuff, you know, I know, like, it's good to have fun merch and all that kind of stuff. But, man, it just blesses us so much.
It does.
Like, it keeps us going. There were years where touring, again, I don't know if I mentioned I toured with the Newsboys a couple times. But
that's right.
There were times. Like, that Festival Candios, I made more money selling merch than I was being paid.
Oh, yeah.
And there were so many, like, there were 3 years. I did 3 years of Festival Candios, and I did it because merch was paying the bills.
Yep.
And, I look back on that, like, man, thank goodness people would come up and buy the stuff. Okay, I got a couple of last things, and then we'll close up. And I want to finish by playing a couple of your songs.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But so we finished our first run, because I think we went out three different times.
Yep.
But that first one, we did, I think, 103 shows.
Yeah.
I really think we did.
It was
103 shows.
Probably in 105 days. Like, we yeah, were right. nuts.
Yeah, it was insane. So when we finished that tour, we pulled into Nashville, no sleep. We got to your house, and I think you were maybe staying with Ben or
probably
staying
was,
with somebody.
Yeah. I think I was living with Ben at that time.
So we got to your house early. It's like 8 a.m. I dropped my car off when we left for tour. My wife was not there. She had gone off to cheat on me. No, I'm just kidding. That was, sorry, spoiler alert. That was years later. But no, she had flown back to Houston to visit her parents. And so she wasn't going to be there for like 2 days. And we got in, and that particular week, speaking of merch, I had sold like $2,000 total of that over the week, which was insane.
Wait, that's huge.
It was huge.
That was a great week.
And you know how cheap I am. So as I was driving home, I had to get gas, and I was like, you know what? I sold over two grand in merch this week, and I busted myself on this whole tour. I'm going to treat myself, and I'm going to buy a VHS movie from the gas station. And now I look back on that, and I was like, I remember sitting in the parking lot filling my tank up going, should I really do it? Should I splurge on myself?
So funny.
So I bought a $6.99 VHS tape, and the tape I got was the Blair Witch Project.
Oh,
because I hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
And I went home to my little house in Nashville, put it on, and it was terrible. It was I was so mad. I was like, ah. Can I return it? Like, I was so mad that I'd wasted $6.99 of that. Anyway, I fell asleep around 1 o'clock on the couch. Fell asleep, and I woke up at 11, and the phone was ringing. And so I answered the phone, and it was like, "Where have you been?" And I was like, "Oh, I just dozed off. You know, this tour just took it out of me. I was super tired." And then I realized it was 11 the next day.
Oh, wow.
That's how tired I was at the end of that tour, is I'd fallen asleep at 1 p.m. and just slept all night to 11 a.m. the next day, and was just, oh, man, miserable. Okay, so last question. I may need to move this around because I don't want to end on a bad note, but I just think it was hilarious. Do you remember a time you ever got mad at me?
I got mad at you?
Yeah. You don't ever get mad.
I got mad at Musser.
Yeah,
you got mad at Musser.
We all got mad at Musser. Musser was his assistant that he brought on the road to annoy me.
It was kind of a long story, but Musser, I remember him being a problem at different times where we were upset at something he had done or something he had said to somebody, and then they were mad at us. But I don't ever remember being mad at you,
Bob. You would say, so this is why it sticks out of my mind, because you just never, like, we never got mad at each other. We toured so well and just were on the same page.
It was a long time. We were out for a long time.
Yeah.
But I don't remember.
So one night we were doing a show, and the show was miserable. It was like a really small crowd, and they just were not into it. There was, I think we were a part of something else going on.
Oh, that could be. That's always a bad sign.
Yeah. And so I got up. They really weren't listening to your music, but they were listening to you more than they were listening to me. And so you went, I went, intermission. Nobody came to our table during intermission. I'm just sitting there. I'm like, oh, let's just pack up and let's get going.
Yeah.
And then you got up, did your second half. I did my second half. And I didn't do this on purpose, but I just totally forgot about bringing you up to do worship music at the end. Just totally blanked, and because I was so ready to get out of there. And I was like, all right, thank you guys so much. We'll be at our table. And I walked off stage, and you were sitting over there with your guitar on, ready to get up. And I was like, and I just froze. And I was like, oh, I am so sorry. And you never get mad. I want the listeners to know you're like the nicest guy in the world. And you were like, after 4 weeks solid, you forget. How do you forget something like that? But at that moment, you were mad, and it was understandable because we were sleep deprived and you were ready. You had your guitar.
Yeah, I had ready to go.
And really, that probably would have been a great thing for us to do, to get up and worship God at the end of like a miserable night. But I remember you being so stern. I thought to myself, that was the first time I thought, oh, I bet he'll be a good dad.
Oh, like, that's cool.
Because you kind of scolded me like, look, this is your job. We've been doing this for 4 weeks now. You should know.
Oh,
you know.
Gee.
But that's the only time I ever remember you getting mad at me.
Well, hey, I apologize.
18 years later. But yeah, I don't remember that at all. But I do remember just the fact that we were together as much as we were. We really were a pretty well-oiled machine. You know, we had really got it down. We knew our lanes. And but yeah, it really does talk about being on the road with somebody. Really, you get to see them at their very best, and you get to see them at their very worst.
when the hole is full.
Yeah, when the hole is full.
All right. Well, I want to close with some songs. Do you want to intro some songs? Like, what songs do you want me to play? There's so many great. So you have a comedy album,
yes,
out, and what is it called?
The album that I have is called I Live Dangerous, and it's available on iTunes or Spotify or Amazon or Google, and it is probably one of the things I'm most proud of. I really worked hard on that, and I really felt like this is my chance to make comedy music, and not just, well, I always tell people I write original comedy music. They're not parodies. That what I do is kind of like situational comedy that's in songs, and so they're unique songs, and they're very, it got some really fun parts to them. I also have an album or two prior to when I used to do just singer-songwriter as well. So there's kind of a little bit of everything. And I think if I was to choose a song that off the comedy record, I would say probably Office Supplies was one of my favorite.
Because okay, we'll play that.
Just so it's just so ridiculous.
That whole album, because there's a song, How You Can Talk Like a Robot.
Yeah,
there's a song about a fainting goat. I mean, and I know, listeners, you're like, another song about a fainting goat? Sure. Yeah, it's been done to death. Yeah. But there's so many great things. But Office Supplies is actually one of my kids' favorites, so we'll play it now.
Office Supplies, yeah, Office Supplies. I close my eyes, I see Office Supplies. You might think I'm a nerdy guy, yet I'm totally normal. I just heart Office Supplies. It's 8 a.m. and I'm here in front of Sturples. Note, I can't use real names, so I've disguised it. I roll my card up to the glass doors, and they open like the gates to the promised land. Wait, it gets better. I see shiny things and blinky things, and that's just what's on the sales associate's button that he wears as he says hello, only because that's what the handbook says he has to do. But inside, his heart is not saying hello. Oh no, he's really dancing with the joy of 10,000 unicorns. Note, unicorns are above average in happiness already. The reason for his happiness, you might ask? Well, none other than the grandest sale of all time. Now, nothing is really on sale during the sale, but they have a huge banner, so that makes up for it. Office Supplies, yeah, Office Supplies. I close my eyes, I see Office Supplies. You might think I'm a nerdy guy, yet I'm totally normal. I just heart Office Supplies. What to see first? The name brand paper? The stylish erasers? Perhaps sniff the Sharpie, I mean, test out the Sharpies. Wait a second, what's this? A device that has harnessed the power of electricity to sharpen a pencil? Brilliant! But wait, here is an interface that uses sunlight technology to energize its calculations. Exquisite. Well, looky here. Steel forged in the fires of Mordor. Shaped into drawer-like holders that slide on rails like figure skaters on glass. They call it a filing cabinet. I call it fantastic. Office Supplies, yeah, Office Supplies. I close my eyes, I see Office Supplies. You might think I'm a nerdy guy, yet I'm totally normal. I just heart Office Supplies. I'm totally normal. I'm totally normal. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mechanical pencils. Mechanical pencils. Yeah, 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 yeah. Office Supplies. Yeah, Office Supplies. I close my eyes, I see Office Supplies.
You might think I'm a nerdy guy, yet I'm totally normal. I just heart office supplies.
Okay, so like I Live Dangerously is your comedy album, but when I was touring with you, it was interesting because you had your self-titled album on Flickr Records, and then you came out with Whatever the Weather.
Yes.
And that album I still think is flawless, like every song on there. And it's not a comedy, you know, like there's not comedy songs on there per se, but there's so many clever songs on there. But I think there was a song on there that you did want to play. Do you want to set that up?
The song that I know you really like, Silver and Green, and that was a favorite of mine as well. It was a song that just, it took the story from the Bible of when the disciples...
Well, hold on.
Oh, you got another one in mind?
No, because I was going to close the podcast with Silver and Green. Okay. But didn't you want to play the other one
I jumped
first?
The gun.
That's okay. Sorry. It's totally fine.
I want to play a song that when I recorded Whatever the Weather, it was done partly in Canada, partly in the U.S., and some of it was done with people, but a lot of it was just put together all by myself in the middle of the night. And I remember I wrote this song called Wave the Peace Sign. And I remember as I was singing that song, I'll never forget listening to that song and just the hair was standing up on my arms as I was kind of like just I was having this really this experience with God, just like just singing to him and like letting everything else fall away and just like having church all by myself in the middle of the night, in the middle of the studio, nobody anywhere. And I just remember thinking I could do this all night long. And of course, what you're doing in the studio, you're trying to catch a good take, right? Mm-hmm. And I just kept on singing it. And I never wanted to get that good take. I just was having so much fun. And so that song always has meant something special to me because of the night that I sang it for the record was just such a beautiful church experience. You know, I was just singing to God and just having such a great time. So that song means a lot to me.
Okay, well, we'll play that.
It makes you wonder, am I living for the God? Am I living for what that gets me there? One more thing I can't wait, cause maybe don't rush, won't last that long. It'll get off the bus just as quick as it. Someday we'll
Okay, and you're right. Silver and Green is my favorite song. Like, the whole album is just so clever, and there's just so many great songs on there. But when I heard that, you were talking about, like, having church by yourself. You had sent me, a copy and was like, hey, this is what I'm working on. And so it hadn't been mastered or anything, and I put the CD in my car, because back when you could do that. And I was driving around Nashville, and I was listening. And when that song came on, I pulled over because I was like, oh, my goodness, because it does – I'll have you set it up and tell the story. But I was just all of a sudden taken back to that moment at the Gates of Beautiful, and I was there, and I was, like, feeling the excitement that these guys were feeling, saying, you know, what I have, I'll give to you. And I listened to that song, like, 4 or 5 times, just pulled over on the side of the road, and I had church. Like, it was great. So, yeah, set it up.
A lot of when you're a songwriter, you can often get stuck in this, in kind of this rut where everything is me, I, and you're writing songs where it's about you and your thinking and your experience and what happened to you. And sometimes that makes a lot of sense for you know, the what you're speaking on or what you're singing on. But every so often, I think it's really good practice as a songwriter to create something in third person where you're singing a song about somebody else and their experience. And I've always loved the story of the disciples and just of how they had this faith that healed through the power of Christ. And I thought, I'm going to write a song about that one day. And so I just kind of studied it and thought, how can I take this and be creative with this story of these two guys and the fellow who was lame at the gates. And so it kind of just turned into a little bit of a exercise in creative writing. Really, when you think of it, I was just creating this story in a fun way. And of course, instead of silver and gold, I have none. I thought, well, hey, nowadays it's money, green, you know? And so I took a little liberty with some of it. There's also a little catch in there too. I say in the song, you can walk again, but the truth is he had never walked before. So it's a little, it's a heretical. Is that when you,
yeah,
but, you know, the idea is still there that, you know, the power of, faith in this man to be healed, through God in his working through these disciples was just such a powerful and incredible story. And it was fun to sing about.
Well, I wanted to close the podcast by playing that song because it is my favorite song. It's a go-to song. Before we do that, though, tell everybody where they can, like, find out stuff about you.
Yeah, I have a website. It's RileyArmstrong.com. Of course, you can head to YouTube as well, and I've got a bunch of both my silly videos and some of my serious songs on there, and that's just YouTube.com, and then I think / Riley Armstrong. You can search it. There is a hockey player named Riley Armstrong.
I noticed that when I was looking.
You might
stuff.
Come across him too, and then of course
doesn't
you know,
sing as well.
No, he's not quite as good a singer, but he's much better at hockey than I am. And then of course you can stop by and find me on Instagram too. I haven't posted a picture in a little while, but it's been a couple years. And
right as our tour ended.
Yeah, right as our tour ended.
It was the last photo that you posted.
And here's the problem. Every time I go to post something on Instagram, I'm like, okay, here I go. I'm going to post something. What do I got to post? All right, nothing really going on. So anyway, but yeah, so any of those.
I went to your Instagram page and I was like, I don't think Zephyrin's 3. I think he's in high school.
But I'm going to get cracking on that here soon, hopefully. So, but in the meantime, yeah, stopping by the website. We'll link you to all
those.
Are you
on Spotify, Pandora?
Yep, Spotify or Pandora. Yeah, all of those wonderful platforms.
So you don't have to buy a CD, but if you want to get Riley 3 cents,
yes.
Go to Pandora and just type in Riley Armstrong.
Or this is a good one. If you could listen to me on Pandora, but then Shazam me with your phone, that's a great payday. I get at least a cent and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay. Well, before you Shazam him, actually, you can Shazam him while we play this song.
That'd be awesome. Please do.
Man, thank you for being on the podcast. It is, man. Just a blast. We've got a lot of history. And speaking of history, this is Silver and Green.
Take me to the gates of beautiful, please. Yeah. I got to go beg for money. No different than the day before, you see. When your legs don't work, you got to go beg for money. Until these two guys surprised me. They talked, I listened. Silver and green, we have none. This Matt home for so long now. I'm afraid I might just be stuck right to it. But you say in this name there's healing power. It sounds crazy, but for some reason I believe it. That very moment something changed in me. Look out, silver.
It's available on iTunes. It's available on iTunes.